because you were looking for your mother. The speed of the monster's hand rubbing increases. His chest heaves. His hood moves down a fraction, then up again, infinitely slowly, and then everything is silent. Elsa nods and looks down at her lap, and once again, her anger wells up unreasonably inside her.
My granny was also someone's mother. Did you ever think about that?
The monster doesn't answer.
You don't have to guard me,
Elsa snaps and starts scratching more swear words into the wooden armrest. Not guard, the monster finally growls from behind her. His black eyes emerge from under the hood. Not guard. Friend. He disappears back in under the hood. Elsa burrows her gaze into the floor and scrapes her heels against the wall-to-wall carpet, stirring up more dust. Thanks, she whispers grumpily. But she says it in the secret language now. The monster doesn't say anything, but when he rubs his hands together, it's no longer as hard and frenetic.
You don't like talking so much, do you?
No. But you do. All the time.
And that's the first time Elsa believes he's smiling, or almost anyway.
Touché.
Elsa grins. Elsa doesn't know how long they wait, but they keep waiting long after Elsa has really decided to give up. They wait until the lift door opens with a little ding, and the woman in the black skirt walks into the corridor. She approaches the office with big strides, but freezes mid-air as she sees the enormous bearded man and the small girl, who looks as if she'd fit into the palm of one of his hands. The girl stares at her. The woman in the black skirt is holding a small plastic box of salad. It's trembling. She looks as if she's considering turning round and running away, or maybe, like a child, believes that if she closes her eyes, she'll no longer be visible. Instead, she stands frozen to the spot a few meters away from them, her hands grasping the edge of the box as if it was the edge of a cliff. Elsa rises from her chair. Wolfheart backs away from them both. If Elsa had been looking at him, she would have noticed as he moved away an expression on his face that she had never seen in him before. A sort of fear that no one in the land of Almost Awake would have believed Wolfheart capable of. But Elsa doesn't look at him as she rises from the chair. She is only looking at the woman in the black skirt.
I think I have a letter for you,
Elsa eventually manages to say. The woman stands still, with her knuckles whitening round the plastic box. Elsa insistently reaches towards her with the envelope.
It's from my granny. I think she's saying sorry about something.
The woman takes it. Elsa puts her hands in her pockets because she doesn't quite know what to do with them. It's unclear what the woman in the black skirt is doing here, but Elsa is certain that Granny had some reason for making her bring the letter. Because there's no coincidence in Miamis or in fairy tales. Everything that's there is meant to be there.
It's not your name on the envelope, I know that, but it has to be for you.
The woman smells of mint today, not wine. Carefully she opens the letter. Her lips tighten. The letter trembles in her hands.
I used to have this name a long time ago. I changed back to my maiden name when I moved into your house, but this was my name when I met your grandmother.
After the wave,
ventures Elsa. The woman's lips pinch inwards until they disappear.
I plan to change the name on the office door as well, but, well, I don't know. It never happened.
The letter starts trembling even more violently.
What does it say?
Asks Elsa, regretting that she didn't have a quick peek before handing it over. The woman in the black skirt makes all the right movements to start crying, but seems to be out of tears.
Your grandmother writes, sorry, she says slowly.
For what?
Elsa asks at once.
Because she sent you here.
Elsa is just about to correct her and point at Wolfheart and say,
sent us here.
But when she looks up, he's already gone. She didn't hear the elevator or the ground floor door closing. He's just disappeared.
Like a fart through an open window, as Granny used to say when things weren't where they were supposed to be.
The woman with the black skirt moves towards the door, emblazoned with the words, Reg, psychotherapist, followed by the name she once had. She puts the key in the lock and gestures quickly for Elsa to come in, although it's quite obviously not what she wants at all. When she notices that Elsa's eyes are still searching for her large-hewn friend, the woman with the black skirt whispers morosely, I had another office when your granny last came to see me with him. That's why he didn't know you were coming to me. He would never have come if he had known you were coming here. He is frightened of me.
Chapter 17. Cinnamon Bun. In one fairy tale from the land of Almost Awake, a girl from Miamis broke the curse and released the sea angel. But Granny never explained how it happened. Elsa sits by the desk of the woman with the black skirt in a chair that Elsa assumes must be for visitors. Judging by the cloud of dust that enveloped Elsa when she sat down, as if she'd accidentally stumbled into a smoke machine at a magic show, she decides the woman can't have very many visitors. Ill at ease, the woman sits on the other side of the desk, reading and rereading the letter from Granny, though Elsa is quite sure by now that she's only pretending to read it so she doesn't have to start talking to Elsa. The woman looked as if she regretted it as soon as she invited Elsa in, a bit like when people in TV series invite vampires in and then, as soon as they've crossed the threshold, think, oh shit, to themselves just before they get bitten. At least this is what Elsa imagines one would be thinking in that type of situation, and that's also how the woman looks. The walls of the office are covered in bookshelves. Elsa has never seen so many books outside a library. She wonders if the woman in the black skirt has ever heard of an iPad. And then once again her thoughts drift off to Granny and the land of Almost Awake. For if this woman is the sea angel, basically she's the third creature from that world, along with Wolfheart and the Worse, that lives in Elsa's building. Elsa doesn't know if this means that Granny took all her stories from the real world and placed them in Miamis, or if the stories from Miamis became so real that the creatures came across to the real world. But the land of Almost Awake and her house are obviously merging. Elsa remembers how Granny said that the best stories are never completely realistic and never entirely made up. That was what Granny meant when she called certain things reality challenged. To Granny there was nothing that was entirely one thing or another. Stories were completely for real, and at the same time not. Elsa just wishes Granny had said more about the curse of the sea angel and how to break it, because she supposes this is why she sent Elsa here, and if Elsa doesn't figure out what to do, she'll probably never find the next letter. And then she'll never find the apology for Mum. She looks up at the woman on the other side of the desk and clears her throat demonstratively. The woman's eyelids flicker, but she keeps staring down at the letter.
Did you ever hear about the woman who read herself to death? Asks Elsa.
The woman's gaze glides up from the paper, brushes against her, and then flees back into the letter.
I don't know what it means, said the woman, almost fearfully.
Elsa sighs.
I've never seen so many books, it's almost insane. Haven't you heard of an iPad?
The woman's gaze suddenly moves up again, lingers for a longer time on Elsa.
I like books.
You think I don't like books? You can keep your books on the iPad. You don't need a million books in your office.
The woman's pupils dither back and forth over the desk. She gets out a mint tab from a little box and puts it on her tongue, with awkward movements as if her hand and tongue belonged to two different people.
I like physical books.
You can have all sorts of books on an iPad.
The woman's fingers tremble slightly. She peers at Elsa, a little as one peers at a person one meets outside a toilet where one has just spent a tad too long.
That's not what I mean by a book. I mean, a book in the sense of the dust jacket, the cover, the pages.
The book is the text, and you can read the text on an iPad.
The woman's eyes open and close like large fans. I like holding the book when I'm reading.
You can hold an iPad.
I mean, I like being able to turn the pages, the woman tries to explain.
You can turn the pages on an iPad.
The woman nods with the slowest nod Elsa has seen in all her life. Elsa throws her arms out.
But, you know, do what you like. I have a million books. I was only, like, asking. It's still a book if you're reading it on an iPad. Soup is soup, whatever bowl it's in.
The woman's mouth moves spasmodically at the corners, spreading cracks in the surrounding skin. I've never heard that proverb.
It's from Miamis, says Elsa.
The woman looks down at her lap, doesn't answer. She really doesn't look like an angel, thinks Elsa. But on the other hand, she doesn't look like a drunk either.
So maybe it evens itself out. Maybe this is how halfway creatures look. Why did Granny bring Wolfheart here?
Asks Elsa. Sorry, who?
You said Granny brought him here, and that's why he's afraid of you.
I didn't know you called him Wolfheart.
That's his name. Why is he afraid of you if you don't even know who he is?
The woman puts her hands in her lap and studies them as if she just caught sight of them for the first time and wonders what in the name of God they're doing there.
Your grandmother brought him here to talk about the war. She thought I'd be able to help him, but he got scared of me. He got scared of all my questions and scared of his memories, I think, she says at last. He has seen many, many wars. He has lived almost his whole life at war in one way or another. It does unbearable things to a human.
Why does he carry on like that with his hands?
Sorry?
He washes his hands all the time, like he's trying to wash off a smell of poo sort of thing.
Sometimes the brain does strange things to one after a tragedy. I think maybe he's trying to wash away.
She becomes silent, looks down.
What?
Elsa demands to know. The blood, the woman concludes, emptily.
Has he killed someone?
I don't know.
Is he sick in the head?
Excuse me?
You're a therapist, aren't you?
Yes.
Can't they be fixed, people who are sick in the head? Maybe it's sort of rude to call them sick, is it? Is he all broken up in the head?
All people who have seen war are broken. Elsa shrugs.
He shouldn't have become a soldier then. It's because of soldiers that we have wars.
I don't think he was that sort of soldier. He was a peace soldier.
There's only one sort of soldier,
Elsa snorts. And she knows she's a hypocrite for saying it, because she hates soldiers and she hates wars, but she knows that if Wolfheart had not fought the shadows in the war without end, the entire land of Almost Awake would have been swallowed up by grey death. And she thinks a lot about that. Times you're allowed to fight and times when you're not. Elsa thinks about how Granny used to say,
"You have standards and I have double standards and so I win."
But it doesn't make Elsa feel like a winner. "Maybe so," says the woman, in a low voice that skims over Elsa's thoughts.
"You don't have very many patients here, do you?"
says Elsa, with a pointed nod across the room. The woman doesn't answer. Her hands fidget with Granny's letter. Elsa sighs impatiently.
"What else does Granny write? Does she say sorry for not being able to save your family?"
The woman's eyes waver.
"Yes, among other things."
Elsa nods.
"And for sending me here?"
"Yes."
"Why?"
"Because she knew you'd ask a lot of questions. As a psychologist, I suppose I'm used to being the one that asks the questions."
"What does reg psychotherapist mean?"
"Registered psychotherapist."
"Oh, I thought it had something to do with bombs."
The woman doesn't quite know how to respond to that one. Elsa throws out her arm defensively and snorts.
"Well, maybe it sounds stupid now, but it seemed more logical at the time. Everything seems obvious in hindsight."
The woman does something with the corner of her mouth that Elsa thinks might be a smile of some kind, but it's more like a stiff twitching, as if the muscles round her mouth are new to this game. Elsa looks around the office again. There are no photos here, as there were in the woman's flat, only books.
"You got any good ones, then?"
she asks, scanning the shelves. "I don't know what you think is good," the woman answers carefully.
"Do you have any Harry Potters?"
"No."
"Not even one?"
Elsa asks, incredulous. "No."
"You have all these books and not a single Harry Potter, and they let you fix people whose heads are broken."
The woman doesn't answer. Elsa leans back and tips the chair in that exact way her mum really hates. The woman takes another mint from the tin on the desk. She makes a movement towards Elsa to offer her one, but Elsa shakes her head.
"Do you smoke?"
asks Elsa. The woman looks surprised. Elsa shrugs.
"Granny also used to have a lot of sweets when she couldn't smoke, and she usually wasn't allowed to indoors."
"I've stopped," says the woman.
"Stopped or taking a break? It's not the same thing," Elsa informs her.
The woman nods, setting a new record for slowness. "That would be more of a philosophical question, so it's difficult to answer." Elsa shrugs again.
"Where did you meet Granny? Was it after the wave, or is that also difficult to answer?"
"It's a long story."
"I like long stories."
The woman's hands take cover in her lap. "I was on holiday, or me and my family, we were on holiday. And it happened, an accident happened."
"The tsunami,"
says Elsa, gently. The woman's gaze flies round the room and then she says in passing, as if it only just occurred to her, "Your grandmother found me." The woman sucks so hard on the mint in her mouth that her cheeks look like Granny's that time she was going to borrow petrol from Elsa's dad's Audi by sucking it out of a plastic tube. "After my husband and my boys," the woman begins to say. The last words stumble and fall into the chasm between the others as they pass, as if the woman had suddenly forgotten that she was in the middle of a sentence. "Drowned," Elsa fills in, and then feels ashamed of herself when she realizes that it's probably very unpleasant to speak that word to someone whose family did. But the woman just nods, without looking angry. And then Elsa switches to the secret language and asks briskly,
"Do you also know our secret language?"
"Excuse me?"
"Oh, nothing,"
Elsa mumbles in the usual language and looks down at her shoes. It was a test, and Elsa is surprised that the sea angel doesn't know the secret language, because everyone in the land of Almost Awake knows the secret language. But maybe that's a part of the curse, she thinks. The woman looks at her watch. "Shouldn't you be at school?" Elsa shrugs.
"It's Christmas holidays."
The woman nods, probably more or less at a normal speed now.
"Have you been to Miami's?"
asks Elsa. "Is this some kind of joke?"
"If I'd been joking, I would have said, a blind guy walks into a bar and a table and a couple of chairs."
The woman doesn't answer. Elsa throws out her arms.
"Do you get it? That a blind guy walks into a bar and a table..."
The woman looks into her eyes, smiles faintly. "I got it. Thanks." Elsa shrugs sourly.
"If you get it, laugh."
The woman takes such a deep breath that if you threw a coin into it, you'd never hear it hit the bottom.
"Did you think of that one yourself?" she asks after that.
"Which one?"
Elsa counters.
"About the blind guy."
"No, Granny told me."
"My boys used to. They used to tell jokes like that, asking something strange and then you had to answer, and then they said something and laughed."
As she says the word laughed, she stands up, her legs as fragile as the wings of paper planes. And then everything changes quickly. Her whole manner, her way of talking. Even her way of breathing. "I think you should leave now," she says, standing by the window with her back towards Elsa. Her voice is weak, but almost hostile.
Why?
I want you to leave, the woman repeats, in a hard voice.
But why? I've walked halfway across the city to give you Granny's letter, and you've hardly had time to tell me anything, and now you want me to leave. Do you get how cold it is out there?
You shouldn't have come here.
I came here because you were Granny's friend.
I don't need charity. I can manage on my own, says the woman grimly.
Sure, you're really managing bloody well, really, but I'm not here out of charity,
Elsa manages to reply.
Well, get out then, you little brat. Get the hell out,
hisses the woman, still without turning round. Elsa starts breathing hard, frightened by the sudden aggression, and insulted by the woman not even looking at her. She hops off the chair with clenched fists.
Right then. So my mum was wrong when she said you were just tired, and Granny was right, you're just a bloody...
And then it goes as with all anger attacks. They don't just consist of one anger, but many. A long series of angers flung into a volcano in one's breast until it erupts. Elsa is angry at the woman in the black skirt because she doesn't say anything to make anything more understandable in this idiotic fairy tale. And she's angry at Wolfheart for abandoning her because he's afraid of this idiot psychotherapist. And most of all, she's angry at Granny and this idiotic fairy tale. And all those angers together get too much for her. She knows long before the word leaves her lips how wrong it is to yell it out.
Drunk! You're nothing but a drunk!
She regrets it terribly in the same instant. But it's too late. The woman in the black skirt turns round. Her face is contorted into a thousand broken pieces of a mirror.
Out!
I didn't mean...
Elsa begins to say, reeling backwards across the office floor, holding out her hands, wanting to apologize.
Sir, out!
Screams the woman, hysterically clawing at the air, as if looking for something to throw at her. And Elsa runs. She hurtles along the corridor and down the stairs and through a door to the entrance, sobbing so violently that she loses her footing, tumbles blindly and falls headlong. She feels her backpack whack against the back of her head and waits for the pain when her cheekbone meets the floor. But instead, she feels soft, black fur. And then everything bursts for her. She hugs the enormous animal so hard that she can feel it gasping for air.
Elsa?
Alf's voice can be heard from the front porch, absolutely cut and dried. Not like a question.
Come on, for Christ's sake, he grunts. Let's go home. You can't lie there bloody sobbing your heart out.
Elsa wants to yell out the whole story to Alf. Everything about the sea angel and how Granny sends her out on idiotic adventures and she doesn't even know what she's expected to do and how Wolfheart abandoned her when she needed him most and everything about Mum and the sorry Elsa had hoped to find here and everything about Harfy who will come and change everything. How Elsa is drowning in loneliness. She wants to shout it all out to Alf, but she knows he wouldn't understand anyway, because no one does when you're almost 8.
What are you doing here?
She sobs.
You gave me the damned address, he mutters. Someone had to bloody pick you up. I've been driving a taxi cab for 30 years, so I know you just don't leave little girls anywhere any old how.
He's quiet for a few breaths before adding into the floor.
And... your grandmother would have bloody beaten the life out of me if I hadn't picked you up.
Elsa nods and wipes her face on the worser's pelt.
Is that thing coming as well?
Alf asks grouchily. The worse looks back at him even more grumpily. Elsa nods and tries not to start crying again.
It'll have to go in the boot then,
says Alf firmly. But obviously that is not how things end up. Elsa keeps her face buried in its fur all the way home. It's one of the very, very best things about worses. They're waterproof. There's opera coming from the car stereo. At least Elsa thinks it must be opera. She hasn't really heard very much opera, but she's heard it mentioned and she supposes this is what it sounds like. When they're about halfway home, Alf peers with concern at her in the back mirror.
Is there anything you want?
Like what?
I don't know. Coffee?
Elsa raises her head and glares at him.
I'm 7.
What the hell's that got to do with it?
Do you know any 7-year-olds who drink coffee?
I don't know very many 7-year-olds.
I can tell.
Well, bloody forget it then, he grunts.
Elsa lowers her face into the worser's pelt. Alf swears a bit in the front, and then after a while he passes her a paper bag. It has the same writing on it as the bakery where Granny always went.
There's a cinnamon bun in there, he says, adding, but don't bloody cry all over it or it won't taste good.
Elsa cries on it. It's good anyway. When they get to the house, she runs from the garage up to the flat without even thanking Alf or saying goodbye to the worse, and without thinking about how Alf has seen the worse now and might even call the police. Without saying a word to him, she walks right past the dinner that George has put on the kitchen table. When Mum comes home, she pretends to be asleep, and when the drunk starts yelling on the stairs that night, and the singing starts again, Elsa, for the first time, does what all the others in the house do. She pretends she doesn't hear.
Chapter 18. Smoke.
Every fairy tale has a dragon. Thanks to Granny, that is. Elsa is having terrible nightmares tonight. She's always dreaded closing her eyes and no longer being able to get to the land of almost awake. The worst thing would be a dreamless sleep. But this is the night she learns of something even worse. Because she can't get to the land of almost awake, and yet she dreams about it. She can see it clearly from above, as if she's lying on her stomach on top of a huge glass dome, peering down at it. Without being able to feel any smells or hear any laughter or feel the rush of wind over her face when the cloud animals take off, it's the most terrifying dream of all the eternities. Miamis is burning. She sees all the princes and princesses and the worsers and the dream hunters and the sea angel and the innocent people of the land of almost awake running for their lives. Behind them, the shadows are closing in, banishing imagination and leaving nothing but death as they pass. Elsa tries to find Wolfheart in the inferno, but he's gone. Cloud animals, mercilessly butchered, lie in the ashes. All of Granny's tales are burning. One figure wanders among the shadows. A slim man enveloped in a cloud of cigarette smoke. That's the only scent Elsa can smell up there on top of the dome, the smell of Granny's tobacco. Suddenly the figure looks up and two clear blue eyes penetrate the haze. A shroud of mist seeps between his thin lips. Then he points directly at Elsa, his forefinger deformed into a grey claw, and he shouts something, and in the next moment, hundreds of shadows launch themselves from the ground and engulf her. Elsa wakes up when she throws herself out of the bed and lands face down against the floor. She cowers there, her chest heaving, her hands covering her throat. It feels as if millions of eternities have passed before she can trust that she's back in the real world. She's not had a single nightmare since Granny and the cloud animals first brought her to the land of almost awake. She had forgotten how nightmares feel. She stands up, sweaty and exhausted, checks to see she's not been bitten by one of the shadows, and tries to get her thoughts into order. She hears someone talking in the hall and has to muster all her powers of concentration to scatter the mists of sleep and be able to hear what's happening.
I see, but surely you understand, Ulrika, that it's a bit odd for them to be calling you. Why don't they call Kent? Kent is actually the chairman of this residence association, and I am in charge of information, and it's common practice for the accountant to call the chairman with these types of errands, not just any old person.
Elsa understands that any old person is an insult. Mum's sigh, as she answers, is so deep that it feels as if Elsa's bed linen is ruffled by the draught.
I don't know why they called me Britt Marie, but the accountant said he would come here today to explain everything.
Elsa opens the bedroom door and stands in her pyjamas in the doorway. Not only Britt Marie is standing there in the hall, Leonard and Maud and Alf are also there. Samantha is sleeping on the landing. Mum is only wearing her dressing gown, hurriedly tied across her belly. Maud catches sight of Elsa and smiles mildly, with a biscuit tin in her arms. Leonard gulps from a coffee thermos. For once,
Alf doesn't look entirely in a bad mood, which means he only looks irritated in an everyday way. He nods curtly at Elsa, as if she has forced him into a secret. Only then does Elsa remember that she left him and the worse in the garage yesterday when she ran up to the flat. Panic wells up inside of her, but Alf glares at her and makes a quick, stay calm gesture. So that's what she tries to do. She looks at Britt Marie and tries to figure out if she's worked up today because she has found the worse, or if it's a quite normal fuss about the usual Britt Marie stuff. It seems to be the latter, thank God, but directed at Mum.
So the landlords have suddenly had the notion that they might be willing to sell the flats to us. After all the years that Kent has been writing them letters, now they have suddenly decided, just like that, easy peasy, and then they contact you instead of Kent. That's curious, don't you find that curious, Ulrika?
Mum tightens her dressing gown sash.
Maybe they couldn't get hold of Kent, and maybe since I've lived here so long they thought, we've actually lived here the longest, Ulrika. Kent and I have lived here longer than anyone else.
Alf has lived in the house the longest, Mum corrects her.
Granny has lived here the longest,
Elsa mumbles, but no one seems to hear her, especially not Britt Marie.
Isn't Kent away on a business trip? Asks Mum.
Britt Marie pauses at this and nods imperceptibly.
Maybe that's why they didn't get hold of him. That's why I called you as soon as I hung up after speaking to the account.
But surely it's common practice to contact the chairperson of the Leaseholders Association, says Britt Marie with consternation.
It isn't a Leaseholders Association yet,
Mum sighs.
But it will be.
And that is what the landlord's accountant wants to come and talk about today. He says they're finally willing to convert our rental contracts into leaseholds. That's what I've been trying to tell you. As soon as I'd hung up the phone after talking to him, I contacted you. And then you woke up the whole house, and now here we are. What more do you want me to do, Britt Marie?
What sort of nonsense is that, coming here on a Saturday? Surely one doesn't have meetings like this on a Saturday. Surely one doesn't, Ulrika. Do you think one does? Probably you do, Ulrika.
Mum massages her temples. Britt Marie inhales and exhales fairly demonstratively and turns to Leonard and Maud and Alf for support. Maud tries to smile encouragingly. Leonard offers Britt Marie a shot of coffee while they're waiting. Alf looks as if he's now approaching his usual level of ill humour.
Well, we can't have the meeting without Kent, Britt Marie splutters.
No, of course, only if Kent can make it back, Mum agrees exhaustedly. Why don't you try calling him again?
His plane hasn't landed yet. He's actually on a business trip, Ulrika.
Alf grunts something behind them. Britt Marie spins round. Alf pushes his hands into his jacket pockets and grunts something again.
Sorry, say Mum and Britt Marie at the same time, but in diametrically opposed tones of voice.
I'm just bloody saying that I sent Kent a text 20 minutes ago when you started making a bloody racket about this, and he got back to tell me he's on his bloody way, says Alf, and then adds, the idiot wouldn't miss this for all the tea in China.
Britt Marie seems not to hear the last bit. She brushes invisible dust from her skirt and folds her hands and gives Alf a superior glance, because she knows quite clearly that it's impossible for Kent to be on his way here, because in fact his plane hasn't landed yet, and in fact he's on a business trip. But then there comes the sound of the door slamming on the ground floor, and Kent's footsteps. You can tell they're Kent's because someone is screaming German into a telephone the way Nazis speak in American films.
Jan Klaus, ja, we will discuss this in Frankfurt.
Britt Marie immediately sets off down the stairs to meet him and tell him about the impudence that's been impudent enough to take place here in his absence. George comes out of the kitchen behind Mum, wearing leggings, shorts, a very green jumper, and an even greener apron. He gives them an amused look while holding a smoking frying pan.
Anyone want some breakfast? I've made eggs.
He looks as if he's going to add that there are also some newly bought protein bars on offer, but seems to change his mind when he realises they may run out.
I've brought some biscuits, says Maud expansively, giving Elsa the whole tin and patting her tenderly on the cheek.
You have that. I can get some more, she whispers and walks into their flat. Is there coffee?
asks Leonard, nervously, having another shot of standby coffee as he follows her. Kent strides up the stairs and appears in the doorway. He is wearing jeans and an expensive jacket. Elsa knows that because Kent usually tells her how much his clothes cost, as if he's awarding points in the final of the Eurovision Song Contest. Britt-Marie hurries along behind him, mumbling repeatedly, "The rudeness, the sheer rudeness of not calling you, of just calling any old person. Isn't that just so rude? Things can't be allowed to go on like this, Kent." Kent doesn't really acknowledge his wife's raving, but points dramatically at Elsa's mum.
"I want to know exactly what the accountant said when he called."
But before Mum has time to say anything, Britt-Marie brushes off some invisible dust from Kent's arm and whispers to him in a radically changed tone of voice.
"Maybe you should go down first and change your shirt, Kent."
"Please, Britt-Marie, we're doing business here," Kent says dismissively, more or less like Elsa when Mum wants her to wear something green.
She looks crestfallen.
"I can throw it in the machine. Come along, Kent. There are freshly ironed shirts in your wardrobe. You really can't be wearing a wrinkly shirt when the accountant comes, Kent. What will the accountant think of us then? Will he think we can't iron our shirts?"
She laughs nervously. Mum opens her mouth to try to say something again, but Kent catches sight of George.
"Ah, you've got eggs!"
Kent bursts out enthusiastically. George nods with satisfaction. Kent immediately darts past Mum into the hall. Britt-Marie hurries after him with a frown. When she passes Mum, Britt-Marie looks bothered as she lets slip,
"Oh, well, when one is busy with a career like you are, Ulrika, there's no time to clean, of course not."
Even though every millimetre of the flat is in perfect order. Mum ties the sash of her dressing gown round her a little tighter and says with a deeply controlled sigh, "Just come on in, all of you. Make yourselves at home." Elsa dives into her room and changes out of her pyjamas into jeans as quick as she can, so she can run down and check on the worse in the cellar while everyone is busy up here. Kent interrogates Mum in the kitchen about the accountant, and Britt-Marie echoes him with an "hmm" after every other word. The only one who stays in the hall is Alf. Elsa sticks her thumbs in her jean pockets and pokes her toes against the edge of the threshold, trying to avoid looking him in the eye.
"Thanks for not saying anything about the..."
she starts to say, but she stops herself before she has to say "worse." Alf shakes his head grumpily.
"You shouldn't have rushed off like that. If you've taken that animal on, you have to bloody shoulder your responsibility for it, even if you're a kid."
"I'm not a bloody kid," snaps Elsa.
"So quit behaving like one, then."
"Touché,"
Elsa whispers at the threshold.
"The animal is in the storage unit. I've put up some sheets of plywood so people can't see inside. Told it to keep its mouth shut."
"I think it got the point, but you have to find a better hiding place. People will find it sooner or later," says Alf.
Elsa understands that when he says "people," he means Britt-Marie, and she knows he's right. She has a terribly bad conscience about abandoning the worse yesterday. Alf could have called the police, and they would have shot it. Elsa abandoned it like Granny abandoned Mum, and this scares her more than any nightmares.
"What are they talking about?"
she asks Alf, with a nod towards the kitchen to shake off the thought. Alf snorts.
"The bloody leaseholds."
"What does it mean?"
"Jesus, I can't stand here explaining everything," he groans. "The difference between a rental contract and a leasehold in a blo—"
"I know what a bloody leasehold is. I'm not bloody thick," says Elsa.
"Why are you asking, then?" says Alf, defensively.
"I'm asking what it means. Why are they all talking about it?"
Elsa clarifies, in the way one clarifies things without being very clear at all.
"Kent has been going on about these sodding leaseholds ever since he moved back in. He won't be satisfied until he can wipe his arse with the money he shat out first," explains Alf, in the manner of one who doesn't know very many seven-year-olds. At first, Elsa is going to ask what Alf meant when he said that Kent moved back in, but she decides to take one thing at a time.
"Won't we all make money? You and Mum and George and all of us?"
If we sell the flats and move, yeah,
grunts Alf. Elsa ponders. Alf creaks his leather jacket.
And that's what Kent wants, the bastard. He's always wanted to move out of here.
That is why she's having all these nightmares, she realizes. Because if the creatures from the land of Almost Awake turn up in the house now, then maybe the house will start to become a part of the land of Almost Awake. And if they all want to sell their flats, then we won't be escaping Miamis. We'll be leaving of our own free will, says Elsa out loud to herself.
What?
Nothing, mumbles Elsa.
The door slamming at the bottom of the house echoes through the stairwell, then discreet footsteps heading up. It's the accountant.
Britt Marie drowns out Kent's voice in the kitchen. She doesn't get any response from Kent insofar as the shirt change goes, so she compensates with a lot of indignation about other things. There is a rich supply of such topics. It's difficult for her to decide which is most upsetting, of course, but she has time to run through several matters, including her threat to call the police if Elsa's mum doesn't immediately move Granny's car from Britt Marie's space in the garage, and also that Britt Marie will make the police break the lock of the pram that's still chained up by the entrance, and that she won't hesitate to put pressure on the landlord to put up cameras on the stairs so they can stop the vile malpractice of people coming and going as they please and putting up notices without first informing the head of information. She's interrupted by the very short man with the very friendly face now standing in the doorway, knocking tentatively against the doorframe.
I'm the accountant, he says amicably.
And when he catches sight of Elsa, he winks at her, as if they share a secret. Or at least Elsa thinks that's what he means. Kent steps authoritatively out of the kitchen with his hands on his hips over his overcoat and looks the accountant up and down.
Well, well. What about these leaseholds, then? He demands at once. What price per square meter are you offering?
Britt Marie storms out of the kitchen from behind and points at the accountant accusingly.
How did you get in?
The door was open, says the accountant amicably.
Kent breaks in impatiently.
So about the leaseholds, what's your price?
The accountant points amicably at his briefcase and makes an amicable gesture towards the kitchen.
Should we sit down, perhaps? There's coffee,
Leonard says expansively.
And biscuits,
Maud says with a nod.
And eggs, George hollers from the kitchen.
Please, excuse the mess. They're all so preoccupied with their careers in this family, says Britt Marie well-meaningly.
Mum does her absolute best to pretend she didn't hear that. As they all head into the kitchen, Britt Marie stops, turns to Elsa, and clasps her hands together.
You do understand, dear. I would obviously never ever think you and your grandmother's friends had anything to do with junkies. Obviously, I'm not to know if the gentleman who was looking for you yesterday took drugs or not. That's not at all what I mean to say.
Elsa gawks at her, puzzled.
What? What friends? Who was asking for me yesterday?
She almost asks.
Was it Wolfhart?
And then stops herself because she can't imagine how Britt Marie could possibly know that Wolfhart is her friend.
Your friend, who was here looking for you yesterday, the one I jettisoned from the premises. There's a smoking man on the stairs, you can tell him that. That is not how we behave in this leaseholders association. I understand that you and your granny have very curious acquaintances, but rules apply to everyone, they really do.
She straightens an invisible wrinkle in her skirt and clasps her hands on her stomach before continuing.
You know who I mean. He was very slim and stood here smoking on the stairs. He was looking for a child, a family friend, he said, and then he described you. He looked exceedingly unpleasant, actually, so I told him that in this leaseholders association we do not allow smoking indoors.
Elsa's heart shrinks, consumes all the oxygen in her body. She has to hold on to the doorframe to stop herself collapsing. No one sees her, not even Alf, but she understands what's about to happen in this adventure now. Because every fairy tale has a dragon.
Chapter 19. Sponge Cake Mix. Fairy tales from Miamis tell of an infinite number of ways to defeat a dragon. But if this dragon is a shadow, the most evil kind of being one can possibly imagine, and yet it looks like a human,
Then what? Elsa doubts that even Wolfhart could defeat something like that, even while he was the most renowned warrior in the land of Almost Awake. And now, when he's afraid of snot and can't wash away the thought of blood from his own fingers. Elsa doesn't know anything about the shadow, only that she has seen it twice, the first time at the Undertaker's, and then from the bus that day on her way to school, and that she's dreamed of it, and now it's come to the house looking for her. And there's no coincidence in my Amos. In fairy tales, everything is always exactly as it's meant to be. So this must have been what Granny meant by protect your castle, protect your friends. Elsa only wishes that Granny had given her an army to do it with. She waits until late at night, when it's dark enough for a child and a worse to pass unseen under Brit Marie's balcony, before she goes down to the cellar. George is out jogging. Mum is still out preparing everything for tomorrow. Since the meeting with the accountant this morning, she's been talking endlessly on the telephone with the whale woman from the Undertaker's and the florist and the vicar, and then with the hospital and the vicar again. Elsa has been sitting in her room, reading Spider-Man, doing her best not to think of tomorrow. It hasn't gone very well. She brings the worse, some biscuits she got from Maud, and once the contents have been mopped up, has to snatch back the tin so quickly that she almost gets an incisor manicure. Granny always said that worse saliva was bloody hard to wash off, and Elsa is planning to give the tin back to Maud. But the worse, who in all ways is a typical worse, rummages round quite ravenously in her backpack, apparently having considerable difficulty understanding how she could have come down with just one paltry tin for it.
I'll try and get you some more biscuits, but for now, you're going to have to eat this.
She opens a thermos.
This is sponge cake mix. I don't know how to mix it properly, though, she mumbles apologetically. I found it in the cupboard in the kitchen and it said, ready sponge cake mix on the packet, but it was only powder, so I added water. It's more like gunk than proper mix.
The worse looks sceptical, but its towel-sized tongue immediately licks all the gunk out of the thermos anyway, just to be on the safe side. An insanely flexible tongue is one of the most prominent superpowers of worses.
There's been a man here looking for me,
whispers Elsa into its ear, trying to sound brave.
I think he's one of the shadows. We have to be on our guard.
The worse buffets its nose against her throat. She throws her arms round it and feels the taut muscles under its fur. It tries to seem playful, but she understands that it's doing what worses do best. Preparing for battle. She loves it for that.
I don't know where it comes from. Granny never told me about those kinds of dragons.
The worse buffets her throat again and looks at her with large, empathic eyes. It seems to be wishing it could tell her everything. Elsa wishes Wolfhart was here. She rang his door just now, but there was no answer. She didn't want to call out in case Brit Marie smelled a rat, but she made a loud sniffing sound through the letterbox to clearly signal she was about to sneeze the kind of sticky sneeze that instantly covers everything in camouflage paint. It had no effect.
Wolfhart has disappeared,
she finally admits to the worse. Elsa tries to be brave. It goes quite well while they're walking through the cellar, and it's quite okay while they go up the cellar stairs. But when they're standing in the vestibule inside the main door, she feels the smell of tobacco smoke, the same kind of tobacco that Granny used to smoke, and a lingering fear from her nightmare paralyzes her. Her shoes weigh 1,000 tons. Her head thumps as if something has worked itself loose and is rattling around in there. It's strange how quickly the significance of a certain smell can change, depending on what path it decides to take through the brain. It's strange how close love and fear live to each other. She tells herself she's just imagining it. But it doesn't help. The worse stands patiently next to her, but her shoes won't budge. A newspaper blows past outside the window. It's the kind of newspaper you get through the letterbox, even if you have a no junk mail please sticker on the door. It reminds Elsa of Granny. She stands there, still frozen, and the newspaper makes her angry, because it's Granny who put her in this situation. It's all Granny's fault.
Elsa remembers the time Granny called the newspaper office and gave them a roasting for putting it in her letterbox, even though she had a "no junk mail ever, thanks" message in surprisingly clear letters on the door. Elsa had thought a lot about why it said "thanks," because Elsa's mum always said that if one can't say thanks as if one means it, one may as well not bother. And it didn't sound like the note on Granny's door meant it at all. But the people answering the telephone at the office of the newspaper told Granny their newspaper wasn't in the business of advertising, but in fact social information, which can be put in people's letterboxes irrespective of whether people thank them not to do so. Granny had demanded to know who owned the company that produced the newspaper, and after that she demanded a word with him. The people at the other end of the telephone line said that surely Granny could understand that the owner did not have time for this sort of nonsense. Of course, they shouldn't have said that, because there were actually an awful lot of things that Granny didn't surely understand at all. Also, unlike the man who owned the company that produced the free newspaper, she had a lot of spare time. "Never mess with someone who has more spare time than you do," Granny used to say. Elsa used to translate that as, "Never mess with someone who's perky for her age." In the following days, Granny had picked up Elsa as usual from school, and then they'd patrolled the block with yellow IKEA carrier bags, ringing all the doorbells. People seem to find it a bit weird, especially as everyone knows you're actually not allowed to take those yellow IKEA bags from the store. If anyone started asking too many questions, Granny just said they were from an environmental organisation collecting recyclable paper. And then people didn't dare make any more fuss. "People are afraid of environmental organisations. They think we'll storm the flat and accuse them of not handling their waste properly. They watch too many films," Granny had explained as she and Elsa loaded the stuffed carrier bags into Renault. Elsa never quite understood what kinds of films Granny had seen and where that sort of thing would ever happen. She did know that Granny hated environmental organisations, which she called panda fascists. Whatever the case, you're actually not supposed to take those yellow carrier bags out of the store. Of course, Granny had just shrugged it off. "I never stole the bags, I just haven't given them back yet," she muttered, and gave Elsa a thick felt-tip pen to write with. And then Elsa said she wanted at least 4 tubs of Ben and Jerry's New York Super Fudge Chunk for this. And then Granny said, "1. And then Elsa said, 3. And then Granny said, 2. And then Elsa said, 3, or I'm telling Mum." And then Granny yelled, "I'm not negotiating with terrorists." And then Elsa pointed out that if one looked up terrorist on Wikipedia, there were quite a lot of things in the definition of the word that applied to Granny, but not a single one that applied to Elsa. "The goal of terrorists is to create chaos, and Mum says that's exactly what you're busy doing all day long," said Elsa. And then Granny had agreed to give Elsa 4 tubs, if she just took the felt-tip pen and promised to keep her mouth shut. And so that's what Elsa did. Late into the night, she'd sat in the dark in Renault, on the other side of town, on guard duty, while Granny ran in and out of houses' entrances with her yellow IKEA carrier bags. The next morning, the man who owned the company that produced the free newspaper was woken by the neighbours ringing his doorbell, very upset because somebody had apparently filled the lift with hundreds of copies of the free newspaper. Every letterbox was stuffed full of them, and every square centimetre of the large glass entrance door had been covered in taped-up copies, and outside every flat, great tottering piles had been left that collapsed and fell down the stairs when the doors were opened. On every copy of the newspaper, the man's name had been written in large, neat, felt-tip letters, and just below, "Complimentary social information for your reading pleasure." On the way back home, Granny and Elsa had stopped at a petrol station to buy ice cream. A few days later, Granny called the newspaper once again, and after that, she never received a single free copy. "Coming in or going?" Alf's voice cuts through the gloom of the stairwell like laughter. Elsa turns round and instinctively wants to throw herself into his arms, but she stops herself because she realises he would probably dislike that almost as much as Wolfheart would. He shoves his hands in his pockets with a creak of his leather jacket and nods sharply at the door. "In or out, there are others apart from you who fancy a bloody walk, you know?" Elsa and the worse give him blank looks, He mutters something and goes past them and opens the door. Immediately they fall into step, just behind him, though he never asks for their company. When they've gone round the corner of the house, out of sight from Britt Marie's balcony, the worse backs into a bush and growls at them as politely as can be expected of a worse in need of a bit of concentration. They turn away. Alf looks unamused in every possible way by his uninvited company. Elsa clears her throat and tries to think of something to make small talk about, to keep him there.
"The car's going well, is it?"
she bursts out, because that's what she's heard her dad say when he's at a loss. Alf nods. Nothing more. Elsa breathes loudly.
"What did the accountant say at the meeting?"
she asks instead, in the hope that this might make Alf as upset and talkative as he gets at the residence meetings. It's easier to get people talking about things they dislike than things they like, Elsa has noticed. And it's easier not to get frightened of shadows in the dark when someone is talking, whatever they're talking about.
"That accountant bastard said the owners had decided to sell the bloody flats to the Residents Association bastards if everyone in the house agrees."
Elsa observes the corners of his mouth. He almost seems to be smiling.
"Is that funny?"
"Are you living in the same house as me? They'll solve the Israel-Palestine conflict before people in this house agree about anything."
"Will anyone want to sell their flat if the house is converted to leaseholds?" she asks.
The corners of Alf's mouth flatten into a more Alf-like shape.
"I don't know about wanting. Most will bloody well have to."
"Why?"
"Good area. Expensive bloody flats. Most people in the house won't be able to afford that kind of bastard bank loan."
"Will you have to move?"
"Probably."
"Mum and George and me, then?"
"I don't bloody know, do I?"
Elsa thinks.
"What about Maud and Leonard?"
"You've got a bloody lot of questions."
"Well, what are you doing out here if you don't want to talk?"
Alf's jacket creaks towards the worse in the bush.
"I was only going for a bloody walk. No one bloody invited you and that thing."
"It's just insane how much you swear. Did anyone ever tell you that? My dad says it's a sign of a bad vocabulary."
Alf glares at her and shoves his hands in his pockets.
"Maud and Leonard will have to move. And the girl and her kid on the first bloody floor as well, most likely. The psychologist bastard you went to yesterday, I don't know, she probably has a hell of a lot of money."
He stops himself, summons some kind of self-restraint.
"That lady, she probably has a heck of a lot of money, that woman," he self-corrects.
"What did my granny think about it?"
There's another brief twitch at the corners of Alf's mouth.
"Usually the diametric opposite of what Britt Marie thought."
Elsa draws miniature snow angels with her shoe.
"Maybe it'll be good. If there are leaseholds, then maybe everyone can move somewhere good," she says tentatively.
"It's good here. We're doing fine here. This is our bloody home."
Elsa doesn't protest. This is her home too. Another free newspaper tumbles past in the wind. It gets caught on her foot for a moment before it tears itself free and keeps rolling like an angry little starfish. It makes Elsa furious again, gets her thinking about how much Granny was willing to fight to get them to stop putting newspapers in her letterbox. It makes Elsa furious because it was a typical Granny thing to do, because Granny was only doing it for Elsa's sake. Granny things were always like that. For Elsa's sake. Because Granny actually liked those newspapers. She used to stuff them into her shoes when it had been raining. But one day when Elsa read on the internet how many trees it took to make just one edition of a newspaper, she put up,
"No junk mail ever, thanks,"
notices on both Mum and Granny's doors, because Elsa is a big fan of the environment. The newspapers kept coming, and when Elsa called the company, they just laughed at her. And they shouldn't have done that, because no one laughs at Granny's grandchild. Granny hated the environment, but she was the kind of person you brought along when you were going to war. So she became a terrorist for Elsa's sake. Elsa is furious at Granny for that, in fact, because Elsa wants to be furious at Granny. For everything else.
for the lies, and for abandoning Mum, and for dying. But it's impossible to stay angry at someone who's prepared to turn terrorist for the sake of her grandchild. And it makes Elsa furious that she can't be furious. She can't even be angry at Granny in a normal way. Not even that is normal.